The 100 Years' War, the Duguesclin Period, Bruges' next session, December 1375. Well, at Christmas 1375, the English ambassadors returned to Bruges for the next session of the peace conference. John of Gaunt was once again leading member of the delegation, accompanied this time by his brother Edmund, the Earl of Cambridge. They were supported by Simon Sidbury, the ubiquitous Latimer, and other prominent counselors of Edward III. A Florentine merchant who witnessed their entry into the city was not impressed. They arrived from Calais with a suite of 300 horsemen looking like a company of soldiers, armed and dressed in campaign leathers, and the Duke of Lancaster carrying a hawk on his arm. By comparison, Charles V's representatives, who arrived 2 days later on December the 29th, lost no opportunity to exhibit their revived wealth and power of France. 200 horsemen in the Duke of Anjou's livery rode through the city gates on chargers with surcoats embroidered with the arms of France, followed by 250 liveried pages riding 4 to 6 abreast. Then came 30 carriages of luggage drawn by teams of 4, 40 liveried falconers, each carrying 2 large birds on his arm, one with a leopard draped over the crupper of his horse, all surrounded by packs of greyhounds and hunting dogs. 150 squires dressed in black and blue coats of silk and satin, and 80 knights in scarlet and black, riding 4 abreast, 8 mace bearers in the livery of the King of France, 30 bandsmen in gold robes and jeweled collars, 6 noblemen on great war horses, some in robes trimmed with fur, others with jeweled collars and headbands, and 2 men holding drawn swords upright before them. Behind this great cavalcade rode the Duke of Anjou and the Duke of Burgundy and the Cardinal Bishop of Amiens, Chancellor of France, all 3 of them dressed in cloth of gold and blue damask, and wearing hoods studded with precious stones. The French ambassador's cavalcade was immediately followed by 2 papal legates with their own great suite of bishops and clerks and an escort of 1,600 horsemen. The English delegation had hired a house on the route to watch the spectacle discreetly from behind the curtains of an upper room, but their hiding place was pointed out to the French royal dukes as they passed. The watchers had to save their dignity by pulling the curtains aside, bowing deeply, and engaging in unrehearsed banter through the window. The conference reopened against an unpromising political background in both countries. Originally fixed for September the 15th, the opening had been repeatedly adjourned, generally at the insistence of the French. They had refused to agree to reconvene at Bruges on the ground that they felt unsafe there, whereas the English refused to meet them anywhere else. For some 2 months, Anjou had kicked his heels at Saint-Omer and John of Gaunt in Calais while this dispute was resolved. The row had all the hallmarks of Anjou's negotiating style, as the Duke of Lancaster recognized when he was told about it. Anjou had recently been cultivating his influence in Paris after years of relative neglect. His emergence as the chef de principal of the French delegation was a bad omen. Quote, "Let us at least have goodwill in time of peace and fighting in time of war," the Duke of Lancaster is reported to have said, his head sunk in his hands, end of quote. On December the 30th, 1375, the 2 embassies entered the Church of St. Donatien simultaneously, but by separate staircases. The ambassadors of each side raised their hats, bowed low, and kissed each other on the lips. But the negotiations made no progress at all. The legates made no attempt to resolve the issue of sovereignty. They moved straight to the proposal that they had floated back in March for avoiding the issue. This envisioned a 40-year truce, in effect a peace, but one which preserved the territorial status quo, broadly favorable to the French. Discussion, however, was overshadowed by venomous disputes about the failures of the current temporary truce. The English delegation produced 2 rolls of complaints about French breaches of the truce in the southwest, to which the French responded with their own roll of counterclaims about the operations of the Gascon companies. After what the delegates delicately called many disputes and debates, they finally produced a wordy draft of the proposed truce. The practical effect of this document was to confirm the French in their occupation of all the reconquered provinces and remove the Anglo-Gascon garrisons from reconquered territories. In return, the legates proposed that the French should pay the English king a lump sum rent spread over 40 years of the truce. All patès and personal ransoms already due at the date of the truce would remain due, but new exactions would cease. Broadly similar arrangements were proposed for Brittany. John de Montfort was to be allowed to retain the three places of Auray, Brest, and Saint-Mathieu, which were occupied by English garrisons on his behalf, and to receive a pension from the revenues of the duchy. Otherwise, he was expected to leave the province and reconcile himself to the loss of his lands, in theory for the duration of the truce, in effect, forever. In about the middle of February, the two delegations were charged to send some of their number home for instructions on these proposals. Well, as you can see, we've got a new proposal. I doubt whether it's going to go very far, but at least it's a little more talking power that's going on. So we'll see how this fares with the English and the other delegations. Now, the sources for this, The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.